Welcome to On OC, the weekly podcast for the voice of OC, Orange County's only nonprofit newsroom. I'm publisher Norberto Santana Jr. Today I'm joined by State Senator John Morlock.
Hello, Norberto. Good John. To have you here. Thanks for coming to Sacramento, and I hope you're enjoying the Newspaper Publishers Association conference.
I appreciate you on such short notice agreeing to see us and talk a little bit about the massive issue that's going on back home, which we're going into court soon on, which is SB 1421, a piece of legislation that actually you and several other Republicans co-sponsored. The other sponsor of it was State Senator Nancy Skinner from Berkeley. Tell me a little bit about why you signed on to that bill, as well as the statewide debate that it's erupted.
Well, it originally started the year before with Senator Mark Leno to have more transparency in these personnel records of public safety officials. It didn't get very far, but I was a co-author of that bill as well. He actually wanted me to be a joint author, but it is a scary territory when you take on the public safety agencies and their organized unions. Nancy Skinner took it and tried to make the modifications that Senator Leno was getting the most resistance. And I was happy to be a co-author again. You and I go pretty far back, so names like John Derrick Chamberlain come to mind, Michael Corona, and all the fun that I endured in Orange County, eventually establishing the Office of Independent Review just to do something. Because, you know, when I walked into the job of Orange County Supervisor, we had 30 lawsuits against the jail. We had a real culture problem. And there is a code of silence. There is a protect your own kind of mentality, which I understand, but that's not the best way to conduct business. And so I have been a little more concerned about what occurs. And I was not afraid to work with Senator Leno, and I wasn't afraid to work with Senator Skinner either, because it's the right thing to do. And I even said on the floor, had you have had access to the personnel records of public safety officials, they probably would have found and arrested the Golden State serial killer a long, long time ago.
What do you think of the argument that the Deputy Sheriff's Union, especially in Orange County, is using, and I think it's a similar argument throughout the state, that this law should not be applied retroactively, that it should not allow any record that has generated before January 1st to be released? What do you think of that argument?
Yeah, I think that it's an interesting one. Certainly an oversight in the writing of the bill. So I have a difficult time with retroactivity in certain areas, certainly in the pension area. You know, I did litigation over retroactivity. When it comes to new tax bills, I don't feel it's fair to make a new tax retroactive to the beginning of the year. So I understand and appreciate their position. So I'm still debating internally how I feel. Senator Skinner has certainly said, yeah, this should go retroactive. I just think that the reaction is showing that maybe things aren't as good as they should be. Maybe there are things that are being hidden. You know, to have a city police department threatened to shred all of their personnel records, that's kind of a hint that there are issues there, and that Senator Skinner has kind of really hit the nail on the head. So I don't have like a strong, you should go retroactive, but I think it's a little awkward when people are fighting this hard not to allow access to those records. So we'll see what your associations and, you know, your related entities, how those lawsuits go.
What's your sense of holding police agencies accountable without, as you said, without those kinds of records for things other than discipline, simply in terms of how resources are being used, on how you can find out about how overtime is being generated? Do you get a sense at all that those types of records that could be opened up would actually give you a better idea, even though it's only very narrow instances, use of force, sexual assault, lying while on duty? But what's your sense there of what we could find out with that kind of sort of like an openness?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you. You know, maybe Nancy Skinner would be someone better to talk to about that. Certainly, you know, the fun that I had even trying to reduce overtime, you know, having to use the performance audit department to try to determine what's really going on inside the sheriff's department. and the pushback and the difficulty and even the Office of Independent Review. If we didn't have, say, Sheriff Hutchins, who, you know, actually kind of embraced the model and used it to help her better manage at that time the department, but still lots of pushback. So it's interesting that public safety officials would be so resistant. And again, all I can say is that it reflects that there's something wrong. And so we've got lots of room for improvement.
Do you think as a legislator you'll come back to the issue? I mean, when you say there's something wrong about the tenor of the reaction, does it make you as a legislator feel like we should keep going into this area and keep opening up these agencies?
Well, we're seeing a lot of legislation on how to deal with criminals. We've seen AB 109, which released inmates from our state prisons. In retrospect, maybe not a good thing. We're seeing Prop 47 and 57, you know, changing the sentencing from felonies to misdemeanors. Maybe not a good thing. So we're talking about public safety, which is our core job, but police officers are getting exasperated because who wants to cite someone for shoplifting when all they get is a misdemeanor and they'll be back out to Target or whatever store that afternoon? So there's got to be some kind of balance because we're telling judges maybe you shouldn't add another gear on sentences because it's a repeat offender. We're doing a lot of things in Sacramento that's going to make public safety a very difficult industry. We've asked them to wear video cameras. We're asking for more openness, but there comes a point where maybe some wonderful candidates will say that, you know, it's gotten to be too much. So we've got to strike the balance, you know, so that we can work effectively with both sides.
Do you get a sense at all in enhancing public safety that part of the job, when you mentioned AB 109, Prop 47, I think all of that legislation takes into account, just like when the mentally ill were released from state institutions, that there would be investments in nonprofits, in other types of treatments that would keep those people, that would divert them, in a sense. Do you see at all a movement in the state to invest those types of resources if we are to have that approach towards criminals?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I will tell you that for this year, I've been put on the Public Safety Committee, which I have not been on before. In fact, I'm vice chair. So I will be enjoying a rather steep learning curve as I get into the more details. But I will tell you, as a supervisor, one anecdotal story. I was invited to LA to meet with the former governors, Governor Duke Majan, Wilson, and Gray Davis. And they asked us, how's AB 109 working for you? And to have Supervisor Bill Horn from San Diego start listing the names of the women that had been murdered in his district by inmates that were released. To have Supervisor Brad Metzenfeld from San Bernardino say, you know, property crimes are up 30%. You know, that's not a good thing. And I could go on. Every supervisorial board chair that was present had stories of what was not going well. So we have to somehow, again, strike the balance. We have to help our public safety officials, but we also have to say, what do we do with rising prison populations? What do we do with programs where we're trying to reduce recidivism? And, you know, how are they doing and how are they not doing? Prop 57 says you got to give the savings to do this and that. How do you calculate savings? And why would you bother having savings if you couldn't keep them yourself? You know, so there's just a lot of things I think that need to be reanalyzed and reviewed. Because, again, I don't want to exasperate an industry that's protecting us.
Do you worry at all about, I mean, as you said, we're watching now police unions go into court arguing pretty hard against any sort of transparency. Do you worry about public support for those agencies, given what they might see in terms of an argument for saying we don't want to share records?
You know, and I think I probably just want to wait until I see what a judge says, because we are a new territory. And even if we went prospectively, at least we've made progress. So I'll just have to wait and see.
There is an interesting thing in the beginning of our interview that you mentioned, the sort of the different opinions there on retroactivity. The same deputy sheriffs that argue that their pensions should be retroactive are the same people that argue that the documents about the work that they did should not be applied retroactive. Tell me a little bit about the challenges that you faced on public safety pensions from a supervisor all the way up in the state office.
Well, that's a nice segue, Norberto. And if we wanted to talk about the ironies in government, we could probably be here for a few hours. So, yeah, we had a bull run, a bull market in the late 90s, and the internal actuaries for CalPERS said maybe we could improve benefits. They probably should have said maybe we ought to sell our stock holdings because they're so, as Alan Greenspan said, frothy, trading at 60 times earnings per share, which is historically high. They probably should have said, let's sell those stocks and let's buy 8% paying bonds. And then they would have been fully funded and probably set for years. Instead, they said, let's improve benefits and let's improve them 50% and let's make it retroactive to the date of hire. Well, you know, defined benefit pension plans are difficult to begin with. Peter Drucker said they'll work if you can guarantee that the employer will be in business in perpetuity. Not too many companies can do that. Government can, but to change the pension formula midstream after decades of funding for one formula and then overnight increasing the formula by 50%, you have now taken a 100% funded plan to a two-thirds funded plan. And once you're behind, catch-up ball is very difficult. And when you give yourself a high bogey where you have to earn 8.25% or 7.5% every year, that is a recipe for falling behind. So the good news is that at least CalPERS has said maybe we ought to lower our investment assumption rate down to 7%. It probably should be lower, but what that means is when you lower the assumption, then you increase the contribution. So now we have cities all around the state and we have school districts all around the state that are struggling because these increased contributions are crowding out other important services that they provide. You have your office in the city of Santa Ana. It has been struggling financially for years. It actually thought it could save money by outsourcing to the Orange County Fire Authority, you know, which was sort of a temporary fix. But these pension costs and these increased payments are having, you know, a very difficult impact on our cities and our schools. And what's going to happen? We'll probably be asked to pay more in taxes. And why would that be fair? You know, because it wasn't the taxpayers that said, you know, give these massive pension increases to the employees. It was the public employee unions that were very successful in getting their candidates elected, and therefore that's how the system works. And now here we are trying to figure out how to solve it. And the answer that came out of, say, the Schwarzenegger Public Employee Post-Employment Committee was, hey, pay it. You know? And we're getting the same probably from Governor Gavin Newsom. He's saying, let's pay these pensions down a little more aggressively, a little early, which is the right response, but maybe you can only do that when the economy is good. What happens when the economy is bad? Because now you have a twofold problem. One is you're having less revenue come in to address this problem. And two, your pension system is probably losing money as well and creating a larger deficit. So not a pleasant scenario to think about or contemplate.
What's the impact you think on public safety? I think that one of the last numbers I heard was something like 60% of a deputy's salary, that equivalent, is what we're spending on a pension. So in a sense, I kind of have to hire two deputies to get one moving forward, given that pension obligation. You just talked about AB 109, Prop 47. What happens to public safety in this state then?
Well, we did something really interesting last year. We wrote CalPERS and said, what if we had you review the actuarial numbers to see if we could have the cost of living adjustments postponed until the pension plan was at least 80% funded? Well, what they did is they held a finance and administration committee meeting and put that on the agenda. And the committee is comprised of members of the CalPERS board. And all of a sudden, 12 plan sponsors showed up. And they started to tell literally what month they'd run out of cash. They started to explain that their police departments had been cut 25%, that their fire departments had been cut 25%. One city didn't show up, but an Orange County city reduced their staffing by 15%, but their CalPERS, their pension contributions have gone up more than 80%. They were saying, give us a tool to negotiate. Let us be able to negotiate no COLA increases until we are better funded. This is something that we should have access to. And the committee shut it down and said, no way. Why? Well, because maybe 2/3 of the CalPERS board is comprised of union members. So we've got areas where we can provide solutions, but not in this environment, not in this capital.
So what happens?
Well, what happens eventually is you implode. And that's tragic. But then, you know, you do what you should have done all along and make some changes if there's leadership there. So I don't know how that plays out. You know, we've seen some pretty big cities file for Chapter 9 bankruptcy, and you get in front of a federal bankruptcy judge, and he says, hey, in the federal court, you can rescind state contracts, which includes the bargaining unit agreements with your unions. But Stockton and San Bernardino, these cities said, well, we don't want to change our pensions because then we won't be competitive. We can't hire people because they would go to other cities, which may or may not be true. I would think that if you had a good, secure job and were still getting a decent pension, not gold-plated, you'd be fine working for those two cities. But the city of Detroit, Judge Rhodes said, let's change the benefits that retirees are getting. They cut the retiree benefits. And so that's the future. Is like all of a sudden now everybody that was getting a reasonable pension will now have it cut by some kind of percentage. And it's just going to be gnashing of teeth, right?
There was a big debate in the city of Santa Ana increasing police officers' salaries again. I remember at one point you were running numbers on Orange County cities and said a lot of them were in trouble. I think Santa Ana was one of those that was in the deepest trouble. What's your sense of the fiscal health if you remember back when you were running those numbers?
Well, we did those numbers when I was chairman of the board back in 2012. You know, where does Orange County sit with 58 counties? We were in 46th place. That's what a bankruptcy will do to you, especially when we're chided all the time about being a wealthy county. We made some tough decisions. The unions weren't happy with my 8 years on that board of supervisors, but I will tell you that we're now in 28th place. We've moved up where other counties, you know, didn't make some of the tough, hard decisions that we did. And so they fell and we moved up. So we decided after watching these cities go before CalPERS, maybe we ought to do a little analysis of all 482 California cities. And that was rather revealing. You know, who's at the bottom? Cities that produce governors. San Francisco, Oakland. We had LA not in great shape. Then we said, well, how about the 944 school districts? What are they doing? Well, they don't look very good either. We've got, there's a few districts that combined their financial statements. So out of the 940, I think LA Unified was 924th. So it's like, really, you're going to strike and ask for a 6% pay increase? How do you have a pay increase? How do you have a pension, defined benefit pension? And how do you have lifetime retiree benefits? How do you have all three of those? Yet if you're going to have two of those, you ought to not be asking for pay raises. So it's one of those things where the police department in Santa Ana has to sit down and look at its total compensation. If it's getting a salary, and as you pointed out, for every dollar that's being paid in salary, 60 cents is being paid in pension, and then they get a pretty reasonable medical insurance program with probably dental and eye care and life insurance. And so you look at everything that the city of Santa Ana is paying for that police officer. You look at total compensation, and they'll probably find that over time that their total compensation has actually kept up with inflation and is doing well. So that means that maybe because we're paying more into the pension, paying more for benefits, that maybe the salary has to stay level. Because if you increase the salary, then you increase the pension, and it just kind of just gets to be a death spiral after a while. So it's all math. It's all there. But, you know, it's hard to explain, especially to frontline, you know, the people that are helping us, you know, keep our city safe. But there's only so much to go around.
You talk about how hard it is to explain certain things. I remember we kind of had some fun with it. I think it was a restaurant in Santa Ana where you were at with the deputies union came up after the retroactive lawsuit. And I remember it was a bit of an ugly scene, not necessarily ugly, but it was tense. What's it like to negotiate with that type of union?
Yeah, that was actually before the lawsuit. That was after I won the election. It was sort of an awkward encounter, you know, where we just kind of said hello. But in retrospect, we kept it very professional. We worked together with the president of the AOCDS. Anytime they wanted an appointment with me, I was available. And, you know, we communicated. And I just said, look, here's where I'm at. I'm an accountant, CPA by background, certified financial planner as well. And I'm trying to make sure that we stay solvent. It's not personal. It's just numbers. It's just, you know, I'm just dealing with math. I'm not, my mother would say when I was growing up, John, if I had $1 million, I'd give it to you. You know, as you'd ask for things as a kid. And it was like, okay, there's the reality of, you know, limits, that we don't have infinite dollars to play with. So how do we deal with those finite dollars to make everything fit? Because we tend to give public safety members a higher status in the overall employment pool of the county. So you have public safety members, and then you have general members. And you have to make sure the general members don't feel like they're being always treated like, you know, secondhand, or, you know, like, you know, they kind of feel like, wait a second, how come the sheriff always gets everything and why not the rest of us? And you saw that in full bloom. In fact, you did an amazing article where you sat down at the Register and met with an actuary before the vote, and you costed it out, and the actuary was honest with you. And now, you're very prescient, right? When you look back at your work back then.
Thanks. And that's true. I think it was Bill Campbell that challenged us on that, as well as overtime. And I think, again, that's a number that keeps growing year after year after year. What's your sense of how to engage in that community in a better way? It seems to me like I've never, frankly, after you left, I haven't seen other supervisors dig into the numbers, especially in the sheriff's department. Things like, I don't even see them on a monthly basis, just go, what was your overtime this month and why? Why do you think we don't see that type of engagement when it comes to that one department?
I can only speculate, Norberto, and so I won't. You know, if overtime is 1.5, but hiring someone else is 1.6, you know, you sit there and say, okay, now we got to do new math. Maybe it is cheaper to do overtime. And so that all has to be reviewed and reflected. And then you deal with the abuses. You know, who's doing what? Who's making up numbers? I mean, we're seeing reports out of certain cities where you wonder that anybody could even physically work that many hours. You know, so it's like, okay, let's make sure you guys are on the ball. When you have Caltrans signing off on time reports and the engineer is actually golfing, you know, it's like, really? You know, where is management? Where is the accountability? And you're right. Who's asking the tough questions? And all I can say is, you know, being a supervisor was more executive. So you could pull in a department head and say, okay, you know, your audit report was awful. Do you want to fix your department or do you want to fix your resume? Here at the state, you're a legislator. And if you get an audit report that's very negative about a department, maybe there's a hearing. Maybe you get 5 minutes to ask the department head questions, and then everything just goes on like it went. DMV, you know, it was hard to ask for an audit. Caltrans, the legislative analyst office, saying, hey, they've got 3,500 too many engineers and architects, and nothing happens. It's a real strange paradigm. It's a lot different than the county. So what I try to do to fix that is try and have a chief operating officer. I mean, there's nobody running this state, right? We have a county executive officer, we have a city manager, but we don't have a chief operating officer for the state of California with all these departments where you could say, hey, could you go into this department? And, you know, I want to know why we have a Mental Health Services Act and why $2.5 billion is just sitting in a bank account. Because we got homeless and we got mentally ill and we got to do something. Why are we not? But we don't have that here. I don't have the person I can go to and say, hey, pull the department head in You know, let's get something done. And if they're overstaffed, move some of these people over. And if they're understaffed, you know, Caltrans, move. You know, what do we do to, you know, because that's what we did at the county. You know, we had to make sure that the org chart made sense, that the staffing made sense. And so the joys of being a legislator is a little different.
What's your sense of the future for the state of California, given what you're, the dynamic that you're seeing up here?
Well, we pay a lot of money for the weather. We're taxed higher than just about everybody. Our utility costs are higher. Our insurance costs are higher. We have CEO magazine that says we're the worst state to do business in. And so we were in 50th place for 13 years, running straight. We have the highest unrestricted net deficit of any state. We're being followed closely by Illinois. So that would be a state to follow to see, you know, what happens when a state finally grinds to a halt. They're already billions of dollars behind in their payables. So that might show you what happens. Then you can't borrow and it just gets awkward. So what happens to California? What happens to a system where we have a personal income tax that creates 2/3 of the state's general fund revenues, but only 1% of the population generates half of the taxes? So why would someone still want to live in California with that kind of tax that they have to pay when Nevada doesn't have a state tax, Florida doesn't have a state income tax? So I'm worried about the ability of money to move out of California. But, you know, on the flip side, people are still moving in, although the net migration is higher going out than coming in. So at least we have a governor now saying, hey, let's see what we can do about the pensions. But he has pushed out a budget so far out, assuming on very optimistic numbers. And I don't know what he does to pull it back if the economy slows down. Does he cut everything by a certain percent? Or does he prioritize what he drops first, second, third, fourth, fifth? And to keep maxing everything is a little dangerous when you have infrastructure that's falling apart. You have pensions that are very stressful when there's a downturn. So you can't predict the future, but you could at least get in front of it and say, hey, when are we going to be smart about how we handle our money? If we're going to build a road, shouldn't we be putting reserves aside to repair that road in 10 years? Why are we waking up on the 10th year saying, hey, we're out of money to fix roads? We better tax everybody more. That's not how you manage assets. That's not what the private sector does when they run homeowners associations or, you know, anything else. So we have a lot of things that we need to improve on, but we're also in a precarious situation where another serious downturn, and it's just not going to be pretty.
John Morlock, State Senator for Orange County's 37th State Senate District. Thanks as always for your service and for joining us on OC.
Well, Norberto, the world famous, nice to have you.
Feel free to stop by over on iTunes, like us, stop by the Facebook page, tell us what you like, what you don't like. This newsroom is here for you.